A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Achtung Millwall, being recorded in the immediate aftermath of this afternoon's 2-1 defeat at Hull City. Joining me to chew over the cud of what I found to be quite a frustrating loss is the man himself, Mr. Ryan Loftus. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm very well, Nick. I hope you are. Gathered around a fire, keeping warm on these harsh winter evenings that we've got now drawing in. And, you know, it, like you say, a frustrating game of football to watch. But easier from the comfort of your own home than from the stands of the MKM Stadium, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, first up, full congratulations to the travelling. I think they said 600 on Max's commentary, which sounded, incidentally, listeners, for anyone listened on the iFollow stream, Max sounded like he was at the bottom of the briny ocean. There was a song that my daughter used to watch in The Little Mermaid. It had the crabs on the seabed singing, and that's what Max sounded like for the game. And Jimmy Carter when he joined. Was that 4-4-2 we saw this afternoon, Mr. Loftus? Am I detecting a 4-4-2?
It looked like it, didn't it? I mean, it looked a bit like it on in midweek on Wednesday against Bournemouth as well. Obviously, Rowett spoke about a bit of flexibility in it, but it looked like that again, and potentially again a bit more flexible with Murray Wallace kind of tucking in on the left and Danny Mac pushing a bit further forward, and Ojo kind of working back further than Jed, but definitely getting dangerously close to a 4-4-2. And I think a fair play to Rowett for, you know, he's changing it up. It might have taken him longer than some fans would like to kind of give it a mix up, but he saw it worked well against Bournemouth and thought he'd give it a go. I mean, on the road, you know, it's not something we've seen a lot from Rowett. It's a real attacking lineup, you know, even more attacking potentially than Wednesday's. Obviously, it's against a weaker opposition than Bournemouth are supposed to be. But, you know, it's an attacking lineup that we don't see often, especially on the road from Rowett. So it was an interesting one to see.
Today's starting 11, listeners, I've written down in 4-4-2 formation just because it's the one that always springs into my head. But Bart in goal, we've got Murray Wallace, Hutch, Ballard, Danny Mack across the back line, then the midfield of Jed Wallace, Jules Saville, Billy Mitch and Shay Ojo, and then the front two, Benny Kofobe and Tom Bradshaw. As you say, remarkably open style. I mean, one of the things I've written to myself, we are speaking in the immediate aftermath of the game, listeners, which gives you very little time to form up any kind of thoughts, comments, structure or anything. You know, we pride ourselves on at least being reasonably coherent on this show. So one of the things I wrote down to myself, half mischievously and half meaning it really, but we can't call for open styles of football, Ryan, without the other side of that coin, is that you win some, you lose some with open styles of 4-4-2 play, don't you?
Yeah, it was pretty intuitive. I mean, to be fair, I thought a loss, you know, we said just before we did start recording, a loss was really harsh, I think, on the side. I think my main thing the whole way through the game, I was thinking to myself, is I've seen us play so much worse than this season and not lose, get a draw or even sometimes nick a win. And I've seen us play so much worse than that. I thought we played really well. They were really brave on possession. Playing out from the back, really under pressure and doing it quite successfully. I mean, in the conditions as well, it's, you know, you can't necessarily blame them or anything in terms of both teams are playing in it, but it does make it bloody hard to get any, like, I think the commentary I was listening to, you know, kept mentioning how the ball was just being sliced and skidding off the pitch. I mean, you know, potentially a record for the amount of throws in a game in that one. It was so disjointed.
Yeah.
And that probably benefits you as the away side. Can't let Hull, who, you know, Hull are in good form themselves. And I think that's five wins in a row now, I think, for them.
But, yeah.
you know, I think Millwall played well. We built up well. It's just the same old issue, similar to what we saw again on Wednesday night, where once we get in and around that box and that that final third, we do struggle with ideas. I thought Afobe and Bradshaw linked up quite well. I don't know how often we've seen them two up top together, but they obviously combined the goal. But I thought they looked like they were causing trouble. And then with Jed and and Ojo out wide, it seems a lot to think about. That's good pacing behind, good movement, and it's threatening.
I like Tom Bradshaw. I like the Bradshaw and Afobe combination. One thing I would say, and I had no football intellectual listeners. I there was an article on Twitter in the week where some guy had written like a university treatise on the thoughts and philosophies of Bournemouth. And, you know, to me, at the end of the day, it all comes down to who's creating the most chances. And today, we're calling that a 4-4-2 stance that we took. We created the best of the early chances. I mean, there was an early one I've written down here, Afobe headed over from a Jed cross. An Ojo pass to find Afobe. He's kind of pushed rightwards slightly, but it was tipped over, so the shot was on target. Then scramble inside the box from the resulting corner, Ryan. I mean, the early chances, we on another day, we might have been one, possibly two ahead by the time, sadly, a slight lapse, I thought, in defensive application allowed Hull to take the lead. But, I mean, certainly the first half an hour, pretty much, we were the brighter side by some distance, I thought.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much the way of the game. I think when we did go 1-0 down, it did feel incredibly harsh. I mean, pretty much exactly the same as the second as well. It had been all Millwall, you know, half chances again, not fully fledged, like big open chances. But like you say, the Afobe one, that where he slid in by Ojo, it probably just goes a bit wide again, like the skiddy pitch makes those passes a little bit harder to play. And then Afobe's just off balance where hits it pretty much straight at the keeper, a bit high, but, you know, either side, and it's probably going to go in. You know, we saw his finish on Wednesday. He can definitely do it. So it's just those small margins. And then, to get that kind of sucker punch to go 1-0 down, it was really poor from Danny Mac. I think he'll, you know, be the first to hold his hands up for that. I think he rushed out position there, didn't he, to try and it didn't even look like the ball was there to win, though, to be like watching it back, you know, it doesn't look like the ball's really there to win. I mean, to be honest, he's lucky to get away with the booking as well, because it was not a good challenge on the whole man. And then it leaves a bit of a gap. Ballard has to go out and fill in, and that leaves Hutchinson 2v1 in the middle and kind of Danny Mac kind of trying to fill back in, but in the middle of nowhere, really. And it's an evidence for, you know, Rowett's maybe reluctance to play him all the time. Obviously,
I was just going to say the same, Ryan. I mean, Danny Mac is a Millwall fan. He's a Millwall player. I mean that in the best possible sense of the word, in that he's clearly talented. Some of the forward runs he made and just the sheer amount of persistence and relentlessness that he brought to the game. I mean, you could both have him as a contender for man of the match and also villain of the piece to give away the first goal, certainly, and getting caught out of position. I can see how a player like that would annoy a manager, especially one who values discipline as much as Gary Rowett does. I mean, I'm not going to criticise Danny Mac, because I think he brings that bit of energy and the wild card that we've craved all season. So, as we've said already, you can't complain at sterile disciplined football and then moan when you get beat, because that's always going to be the possibility, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's a classic kind of championship conundrum of, I think Harris used to say it when he was manager and Jacket as well, even when he got promoted. It's really hard to blood youngsters in the division because
you
know, Danny Mac is a very young player. And, you know, it's very inexperienced at this level, you know, only came back last January and was in and out of the side, picked up an injury as well. And, you know, so he's not had loads of minutes at championship level. He's still learning, you know, how to be a player at this level. And so he's going to make mistakes and you have to accept that. And that's what's hard. The championship, it's points are so valuable and mistakes, you know, you make a mistake, it costs you a goal. Yeah. Whereas, you know, lower down, you do kind of get away with them every now and then. But That's the risk you take.
That's the level we're at.
And I, you know, a lot of Millwall fans would rather see him in there making mistakes occasionally. But like you say, and his reaction and his character to to come on. And I thought he was, one of the best players on the pitch in the second half. His delivery was a little bit wanting. And a couple of times, I mean, at one point he was trying to swim across the turf when he did lose his foot. Really struggled to get back up. I wasn't sure what was happening there. But no, he, you know, delivery could have been a bit better, but he was getting forward, causing problems. Obviously, he had his shot as well. And that great tackle, him and a combination of him and Ballard at the other end. To keep out of goal. So, you know, he maybe costs one and saves another. And in the universal scheme of things, Nicky, he balances it out. And, you know, in the end, another day, he could have got the equaliser at least.
No, there it is. I mean, there's the thing in a nutshell, listeners. So I'm not here to damn Danny Mac. I'm here to praise him because it was a game that was always going to be a tough one. You know, the whole city is the proverbial long northern trip, and conditions today were extremely, got worse, actually, as the game, well, it seemed to get worse looking from the comfort of my living room at this TV screen. The equalising goal, I mean, we were a bit under the cosh after we went 1-0 down. I thought that they stretched us a little bit, Ryan. But going into half-time, I thought, well, you know, the chance to regroup slightly. But my spirits were raised greatly by what was a beautiful goal. I mean, that pass from Afobe to find Bradshaw, for me, is one of my moments of the season. It was a wonderful piece of artistry, that through ball.
Yeah. A fantastic goal on his weaker foot as well. And I've said it a lot of times on here, is how often do you see Millwall getting strikers through on goal and finishing well? And, you know, we've seen it through two games now, Afobe getting his one on Wednesday and Bradshaw, you know, a fantastic pass. I mean, the line from Hull was really high up. And, you know, you think they might have seen from Wednesday that Millwall really getting in behind at the moment. But we don't see that very often, but they seem to have added that to the game. And it's a great pass from Afobe. The finish from Bradshaw is excellent. I mean, it looks quite simple, you know, going through one on one, you'd always expect the striker to score, but he just lifts it enough that the keeper just has no chance. And, you know, he's pretty central and gets it nice in the corner and just makes it look a lot easier, I think, than it was. And that's what Bradshaw can do. Like, I think with his goal droughts as they come, you forget how good a finisher he is. And a lot of that goal drought does come from just a lack of chances. But, you know, in front of goal, he is an excellent finisher. And when he gets a bit of confidence, obviously, scored a couple a few weeks ago, and this season it seems to be coming back to goal scoring form to an extent, at least getting goals. That's what he's capable of, and I think, like I said before, about him and Afobe linking up really well, really complements each other. You know, Bradshaw's not as tall as Afobe. I think Afobe they both press really well, and they both harry defenders quite a lot. Afobe probably is a bit stronger, but you can see either of them playing that ball in. And like it was on Wednesday, it was Bradshaw playing a flick on for Afobe. And this time it's literally just the reverse. And if those two can get a bit of a run in the side together and get that bit of chemistry up, you know, it looks like it could be an interesting partnership at least.
I mean, again, it's something I wanted to raise or suggest or put it out there. I don't know if listeners would agree with this, but 4-4-2 seems to offer more chances of partnerships to build in that way. I mean, you've got the classic when Marlon was in his prime, the Marlon and Jed partnership, for example. And obviously, we go back further with some of the classics. But in that team today, I thought Danny Mac and Jed combined, Ojo as well, often combined well. And then the Afobe and Bradshaw double act as well. I think that's interesting, and it's something I want to see developed. We haven't had a proper partnership, it seems to me, at Millwall for some time. So that was a beautiful goal. I know that goals of the season are often spectacular shots from distance, aren't they? Because they catch the eye. But that, for me, is a contender for anyone's goal of the season because of the way that the weight of the ball through, and then the execution of what looks a simple chance, but as you've just said there, Ryan, is not. You know, that's how many times have we seen a John Daddy put that wide over the bar or, you know, down the road or something?
Right, at the keeper. Yeah, I think it's a classic. And I like that point as well about the partnerships. I mean, the last partnership really is that Marlon and Jed, especially when Rowett came back in. The two of them for half a season potentially were unstoppable down that right-hand side. And 4-4-2 does give you that. You know, you can get the wingers and the full-backs, you can get the centre-backs, and you get the strikers, and obviously the centre-mids, all over the pitch. It just works up the shape of it well. But I like the flexibility that Rowett seems to be putting in as well. You know, with Murray Wallace at left back, it's very easy to change in and out of the five to the four. You know, if Ojo at times was working back really well, I thought Ojo had a decent game without being fantastic. But you know, if it's Ojo there, if it's Malone, it's quite easy to adapt it in game and you know, lets Danny Mac push on a bit more when you've got that defensive cover of Murray Wallace. So it looks, of the last two performances, I'd say how Millwall starting to set up with two out-and-out strikers up front as well, regardless of what the shape is.
Yeah.
It looks like Rowett is coming onto something, and it looks like this is going to be effective. I mean, again...
I agree. Yeah.
Still creating chances maybe around the box, but we definitely added more. Definitely had more today, and it was the rub of the green. I really felt in so many, like in the second half, the Hull managed to scramble away a couple, that one where the defender kind of flicked it and it came across and Afobe tried to put it back in. And any other day that goes in, and even their two goals, there were a hint of fortune about both of them. The cross that came in was kind of missed header, and then it almost hit their attacker in the face. And the second
ping pong, wasn't it?
Second one with Hart not quite clearing it. The save, and Millwall, even the defenders trying to not quite clear in the cross that come in. It really was sort of rubber the green game for me.
Yeah, no, I was just looking at the second goal, ping pong. It was kind of toing and throwing inside the 6-yard box. We didn't clear it, so I suppose you've got to put it down to our account in that sense. Luck plays its part, listeners, of course. Conditions were, I don't know if they were worsening in reality for those that went up there. It looked like it was worsening from the TV coverage. Rain and sleet and a kind of a general northern grimness. So sometimes these moments, if you keep putting the ball into danger areas, Ryan, you're going to get a chance. And that's what happened for 2-1. We did continue to create chances thereafter. I mean, Ojo bobbling across the 6-yard box on 60 minutes. And when Smith came on in 66, the ball seemed to be cleared off the line from my take on it. Anyway, I think the removal of Ojo for Bennett, I don't know, it didn't quite spark us. There was no, we seemed to lose a little bit of something once Shea, and also Tom Bradshaw, once he left the pitch, we just seemed to lose a little bit of energy after those two subs. I don't know if that's fair.
No, I thought that myself. I thought the subs, I thought it was a bit early for Matt Smith. Would he come on just after 60 or so minutes?
I agree.
Especially in those sort of conditions where the ball is swirling up in the air and it's that windy, you know, knocking long balls isn't going to be super effective because they're going to get held up in the air and defenders have a chance to read them. And I did think the subs today, you know, potentially in the wrong order. I mean, Bennett normally has a bit of an impact. And he did, to be fair, like towards the end of the game, he started running at his fullback a bit.
But it did
change the game probably for the worst for Millwall. Not that whole like massively came back into it, but it did change the pace of it and the dynamism that we had. I think Smith is definitely a last 20 minutes at least. I think you're bringing on for half an hour, it can be quite...
You're asking a lot of
early, and then you're setting your ways. I think, you know, Rowett said that about why he didn't bring him on against Bournemouth, you know, about that, the fact that it changes the tempo of the game massively. And
yeah.
Comment again on our squad depth, really, isn't it? I mean, the fact that George Evans is the third player to come on, that's not really a... That's, you know, the equivalent of putting Kiefenbeld on to see out a game, really. It's not an inspiring change that's going to drive forward.
To the point that I made to myself, I mean, Evans came in late, 81 minutes, he came on for Saville. George Saville, Ryan, doesn't look the same player. He was anonymous for large chunks of the game today for me. Now, I don't know if I'm being unfair on the boy or what, but he just doesn't seem to have... I mean, when I thought to myself, when Evans came in, that's a better... that we're improving our midfield with that substitution, although albeit with 9 minutes to go. I wonder what the problem is with George Saville. He doesn't seem to be the same player at all. How do you see him?
Yeah, I made the exact same note, to be honest. I've made it partway through the first half, really. He looked... I think people have been commenting saying, you know, he's not really been doing anything, not being as effective.
No.
And, you know, he set really high standards when he came, when he left. Obviously, his final season was so good with Millwall that I don't think he's the same player that he was when he left. I think
I'd agree.
And plenty of time up in the northeast and under Neil Warnock, you know, it beats a man down to an extent.
It beats you down, you know.
So he's not hit the ground running this year, and he's... like particularly on the ball today. He's normally quite tidy on the ball and won't really give it away without doing too much. But even today was quite sloppy with it. And we're used to seeing him getting forward into the box. I don't know if it's a Rowett thing of telling him not to, but you know, whenever Rowett speaks about him, he says that's what he's there to do. He's there to get forward. And even now, he did it. He had not a chance, but almost where he thought he might be able to shoot around the edge of the box. He had obviously had that one late against Bournemouth that he sliced, and he almost needs unleashing. You know, he needs a bit of a free reign. But I think when you're trying to be disciplined and you've only got a midfield two who need to work hard, and maybe our threat comes from out wide, potentially he's a bit limited in it. But you know, question for Rowett of, you know, do you drop him? Because I mean, he's started almost every game this season, and while the midfield cast around him has changed, and you wonder, you know, obviously he's out slightly at the moment, but is Leonard and Mitchell going to be a starting midfield two that we see soon? I mean, Leonard, when he gets in the midfield two, he's normally excellent. You know, we've seen him get forward. Hull was it last season or before the absolute rocket he got down there. So is it a matter of potentially giving Saville a break? I can understand not taking him out for someone like Keith Denbold or even Evans, because that is maybe particularly defensive. But
I agree.
Spell out of the limelight, maybe.
I mean, one thing I will say for Rowett is that he maybe takes his time a little bit, but he does reach a ruthless decision in the end. And, you know, at times today, the conditions were not easy, listeners. I mean, if you know, I'm sure I'm telling you what you know already, but it was chucking it down up there at Hull, which made the pitch heavy, which didn't make any, I mean, best in the world would have struggled to look good on that in that situation. So, but this has been really for some time that Jules Savage looked slightly, I don't know, sedated almost. He doesn't look half the player that he used to be. And, you know, when Evans came in today, I would have preferred, Leonard wasn't on the bench, but I would have preferred Ryan Leonard. But I was quite pleased to see George Evans coming in, which is not a sentence that you ever expect to say. Loss of Bradshaw, loss of Ojo took any energy away from us. So we were reduced then to long balls at Matt Smith, and that just didn't work out. So full time, it finished 2-1. It was a full-blooded game there, Ryan. I mean, as I said at the start, and just to finish us off, really, you can't ask for a more open style of game and then complain when you lose one, because that's the way it goes. But I think today did leave you a slight sense that we should have, could have done better than getting beat 2-1 there.
Yeah, I think you look back at the two games. I mean, you know, I know on the chat, Michael and Mike were really impressed with us against Bournemouth. And I think looking back for this week, really, you think we could have had 6 points in four days, really, against Bournemouth. Probably, you know, could have or should have won there. And even today, I think even a point wouldn't have been bad in the conditions, but a loss feels particularly harsh. And I think it would have been similar. If we'd have lost that Bournemouth game, it would have felt similar, really. We put in a very similar performance, to be honest, and this time didn't get the rub of the green. I think individual errors, again, I know Rowett does point to that a lot, but this time it really does seem like that was the case for the goals. I mean, other than those two chances, you know, did Bart have to make a save, really? The Hull weren't really threatening. And those
really having to pick the ball out of the net, you know, that's
what it is. Yeah, it's just sloppy play, really, and Millwall not being able to find the cutting edge. I think Hull's keeper had a really good game. That save he did from the I wasn't sure whose header. I think that might have been Saville, actually, from the corner, got a little flick on the header, and that was a phenomenal save. And this is where I say, with the rub of the green, on another day that falls to a Millwall player who then taps in, but in this case their defender happened to be just in front of a Phoebe and managed to clear. So it's, I think in a championship season, in a full season, you know, late November, this time of year, you get a result like that. And, you know, it's the commentator was saying, you know, that's our fifth loss now. You know, we've had four, only Fulham have lost less than us. I think we were level with West Brom, and, you know, they're the top two, top three sides. We're not losing games. That doesn't feel like a game we should have lost. It doesn't feel like a game we deserve to lose. But like I said, with Hull on a run, you know, it's that classic thing of momentum. When you're on a bit of a streak, you get the rub of the green, you get the roll of the dice sort of thing. You know, when Millwall went on their run under Harris a little while ago, there's, you know, a few games where we did squeak a win, and we did, you know, get that lucky decision or a lucky deflection or something. When things are going your way, they seem to keep going your way. And that, for Millwall at the moment, it's about building momentum, building that momentum, something we struggled to do under Rowett. You know, you said it before we came on, we seem to be, this season especially, waiting until we're a goal down to start playing. And
Yeah,
it's becoming a trait, and you know we are getting ourselves out of a hole a lot of the time, but when we don't, it is harder for us, and we just need to learn how to build momentum. Hopefully, these two performances, they can kind of look past the results and build on that. But at the same time, we don't, coming into Christmas, you don't want to lose too much of a grip on, you know, or don't want to lose your reach of the top six. You know, we want to at least be within 3 or 4 points of it, if not up in it by Christmas. We don't want to fall too far behind because of silly results like this, really.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I mean, obviously, December, there's still 4 games, I think, to go across December. And then a big January, I mean, depending on where we stand in the division, will govern any moves that we may or may not make when the transfer window opens. I presume for any ins, there's got to be a few outs. I mean, the obvious outs, if deals can be reached, would be John Daddy. I can't see him, if he's not playing and no. Featuring... Now he never really will, Ryan, will he? I mean, you know,
no, he'll be going, I'm sure. Well, I say I'm sure he'll be going at some point, but whether or not January. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, it's well reported that, you know, he had offers in the summer and turned them down both in England and abroad. So whether that's a wage thing or it's not ideal. Hopefully a season of not even stepping on a football pitch might change his mind to an extent. But yeah,
Stepping on the under-23 football pitch.
Exactly. You can't even kind of. But then at the same time, that makes him less appealing for anyone to come in for. You know, you
think he would. Yeah.
So unfit, like match sharpness wise.
I agree.
It's not going to be. You know, God bless the team that brings him in as their thing to spark a playoff push. You know, whether or not he ends up back in Iceland, I don't know. But you know, Ben Thompson, another one who looks like he's probably on his way out, whether or not that's on a free when his contract goes, or if it's just a loan or however it goes, but definitely some outs before some ins.
For different reasons, Ben obviously leaves with his head held high. He's just not been picked, and to some extent I can see Gary Rowett's thinking there. I mean, That might be seen as harsh by some, but I can see that Ben needs to play, and he's not going to be playing at Millwall. So, John Daddy to Ben Thompson, and I guess would you be looking to out Conor Mahoney, or is he probably the least likely to? I mean, you know, he seems like, to put it last week, a fragile Ming vase you might get in the British Museum.
Exactly.
Delicate flower.
If they were looking to offload him, you know, that's. It depends whether or not he's fit. And I think this year and last year, his injury record's been a bit spotty. And again, yeah. He's another one who's just not even getting on a pitch. And makes it up. I mean, if I'm sure obviously these talks are always ongoing at football clubs, but the decision will be is either they need to give him a new contract or sell him in January. Again, it's like a Jed Wallace situation again, but you know, with a much less valuable asset of, you know, Millwall have paid over £1 million for Conor Mahoney.
Yeah.
Got a tune out of him for 3 years. Amazing to think that he would have, you know, at the end of this season, he's been at the club for 3 seasons. And, you know, we'd always have that New Year's Day against Luton, but very little.
I feel like I've barely seen him.
Exactly, like he's not
once or twice, you know.
Yeah, and it's a real shame, you know. He, like you say, he looks bright, but then the injuries and then fades out of games and very patchy. And for Millwall to lose, if they lose a player who they spent a seven-figure fee on for free, then
it's gotta hurt.
Does that, you know, you gotta be looking at people who sanctioned signings. Obviously, that was made under Harrison, but that's and obviously we've got new head recruitment now. But that raises serious questions at a club where money's tight and money isn't great. If Jed goes as well and we don't reap in any cash for him, that's two big outlays or potential incomings that we could have got in, you know, in the other direction that have not worked and they put the club in a difficult position almost.
I'm going to give you Svengali style godlike powers at Millwall at the start of January, Ryan Loftus. If, presuming that John Daddy, if we can wipe the slate clean of the players that are not featuring, and presuming that we are in a position to do deals, would you strengthen by maybe taking, if there's an offer for Jed, would you maybe take that offer to strengthen? If so, where would your mind be working to improve the current squad? Would that feature Jed going out even? I mean, I'm not drawn to that solution, but what do you think?
Yeah, so hard, the Jed situation. I mean, I think selling him in January would be almost an admission from the club that, you know, playoffs might not be on the cards.
Yeah, we ain't going up. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the issue. And I was, you know, like I was saying in our chat the other day, and I was chatting to a couple of the guys on Wednesday at Bournemouth, and it's really hard to see where he'd go for me. Like I said, like looking at the table and where teams are, the only two sides I could see would be West Brom or Stoke. And I also can't really see that coming off because everyone else, you know, if Jed wants to play in the Premier League, like he doesn't hide away from that. You know, he's an excellent Championship player, has been a great servant for the club and does deserve a shot at the Premier League.
Absolutely.
I don't know, obviously, because he's never had that step up, I can't see a Premier League side maybe gambling on him. Potentially, I might be wrong. You know, he wouldn't be very expensive, obviously, with his contract being up, if they did want to give him a go in January and, you know, risk it. And especially for the likes of, you know, maybe not Newcastle now with the amount of money they've got, but say Norwich, who, you know, look like they might be going down. But look, we can risk Jed Wallace 6 months. If he doesn't quite work out in the Premier League, we'll have him for the Championship next year. And we know he's an excellent Championship player. So, you know, is that an option for a Premier League side? Otherwise, in the Championship, Jed wants a shot at the Premier League, so he needs to go to a side where confident promotion is more or less, you know, not guaranteed, but more likely than not. At the moment, the top two are sewn up, and I can't see Fulham or Bournemouth taking him. West Brom, that's why I say then, they look, you know, the third likely contenders to be going up, but if they end in the playoffs, you know, that's a lottery. Again, the Stoke are, you know, look like they might end up in the playoffs. A lot can change in the second half of the season, but everyone else around there, you know, QPR, Coventry, even Luton coming up, you know, look at Barnsley. Barnsley were in the playoffs last year and they're now on to go down. So, does Jed, I think the best course of action probably is to keep him. And I think that's what the club will want to do, you know, keep him as long as they can until they can sign him. You know, I reckon what they need to do is get Max or someone dressed up in the crowd. Ask for Jed, can I get your signature? And accidentally, oh, sorry, it's a 3-year extension. Sorry, Jed, I didn't realise that was a, you know, maybe it's a bit of those sort of tactics of completing a deal that way. But slightly over, it might sour the relationship, but, you know, a contract's a contract and you've got to honour it. But
then you're honouring it.
Other than that, Nick, to be honest, I think it's still the age-old, can we find a number 10? Can we find that creative player to? Because, like we said, we saw it today. Afobe and Bradshaw, you know, they're viable strikers. Rowett's saying, praising Afobe in the week about, you know, thinks he's one of the best in the division, and I think historically he has been.
Yeah,
we just need a player who can play around the edge of the box, create some chances, and
Saw a bit of that today, though, Ryan. I mean, you know, there've been times this season where I thought, oh, well, Benik Afobe, maybe not what he's being cracked up to be, and, you know, then you read praise from Gary Rowett. We saw a very good performance from Benik on Wednesday. And I'm going to keep banging on about the past because it's one of those little moments that lifted my spirits, listeners. But these are top quality moments. And you, that's actually a very hard resource to tap into when you're not the biggest club and you're not swilling around with big money, and you've got to be, you know, as we've touched on, some of the wastes of money with, you know, some of the players. So we don't have much room for error. So a player of Bennick's standing, yeah. I mean, I think Gary Rowett is right. He does look top class, top quality. And it's quite hard to come across that. But we, the creative number 10, that's the mythical beast. It's like, you know, does it exist even out there at our level? I don't know. You've got to put your hand in your pocket. You know?
Yeah, I think that's exactly. I mean, we went in for Josh Windass, I think, in the summer, and Sheffield Wednesday were just looking for ludicrous amounts of money. I think we were offering six figures and they were coming back £3-4 million. And, you know, we're not going to be paying that for players regardless.
No.
You know, since then, I think he's done his ACL or very, very long-term injury. So it doesn't even seem like we can really come in for him in January again. But
we don't do very well with big money signings, Ryan. I mean, I'm just going to look at, I can't remember how much we signed John Daddy for.
I think it was around 750 grand.
Yeah, I think it was reasonably. Yeah, well, it wasn't cheap. I think that's the best way to put it. And you know, we tend not to do very well with big money. Undisclosed. John Daddy Budvarsson, listeners, undisclosed fee. You thought to be 750,000. Connor Mahoney, AFC Bournemouth, undisclosed, but thought to be 1.2 million. So that's £2 million worth of talent that you and me are talking about ordering an Uber cab or a black cab, I should say, with our listenership.
Exactly. And you just know,
Victoria Station.
You just know in the playoff final 2023 is going to be John Daddy Bodvarsson sprinting off, cupping his ears as Coventry go up at our expense. You know, he's going to be reliving that celebration. It'll be a great ball in for Colin Mahoney and John Daddy Bodvarsson right on the edge. But as would be the Milton play to release those two fellas and you know, maybe Ben Thompson as well coming back to haunt us. But it's hard to make work. It's not an easy business, this football. I think finding value in the Championship is an incredibly hard job. And over the last few years, Mill haven't been great at it. And it is something that they need to fix. I think if you look at the players Rowett's brought in, you know, there are potentially some more positives there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems to be clicking a bit. I think it would be hard to argue that. I think Mason Bennett's been decent. Obviously, Ballard's been fantastic on loan. Scott Malone's offered something when he's come back in, seems to be really good. Again, we say Nafobe on loan as well, you know.
Ryan Ojo, I like the look of Ojo, Ryan. I think
Ojo looks good, but again, a lot of these are loans. I think George Evans is bit of a Marmite character, but probably offered a bit of quality and a style of midfielder that we haven't had. And, you know, until the performances we've been discussing, George Saville seemed like a great bit of business as well. So it seems like we're in the right direction, but we'll have to see what the club can do in January. It's definitely just fiddling the numbers and making a bit of room in the budget. But it's hard for players to come in and have an impact in you know, 6 months of a season. It can be tricky to bring them in and accommodate them. So, you know, it might be working with what we've got for the time being, Nick. It might be more of the same for the foreseeable.
There we are. Today's loss leaves us 10th in the table. Not disastrously out of touch with the top six, but QPR now in sixth spot on 32, Mill in 10th on 27, so 5 points and 1, 2, 3, 4 clubs in front of us. On to Birmingham at the weekend. Huge thank you to Mr. Ryan Loftus for taking time on your Saturday night. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me on as always, Nick.
And we'll play out with a voicemail received from Mike Hayden. So until the next edition, dear listeners, probably be at the weekend, I'd guess. Until then, it's arrivederci Millwall. Bye for now.
Achtung, Millwall.
Mike Hayden here, following that disappointing 2-1 defeat to Hull from the warmth of my living room. Firstly, credit to the Millwall supporters who went up there today. Long trip and in a storm as well. Horrendous conditions in Hull. First half was poor. I think we maybe struggled with the conditions a bit. I know it's the same for both teams, but lots of misplaced passes, which you could probably expect, you know, in those really windy conditions. And it was a really scrappy game. Poor goal to concede. They just didn't track runners. I'm pretty sure it was George Saville who should have been back in the box, completely unmarked for their goal. You know, Saville was sort of in no man's land and they score. Hull kind of deserved to go into half-time 1-0 up. We scored a good goal, a Afobe, nice ball through, and a really confident finish from Tom Bradshaw, who I think deserved to start today following his performance against Bournemouth when he came on in the week. And then I thought we looked quite good after the break. I mean, we started to make chances, but then obviously a bit of a sucker punch with them scoring. Again, a Millwall player's ball watching. I think there was about three or four players around the purse. I don't know who had the original shot. But then obviously, you know, Bart spilled it, which, you know, it was a hard shot. Can't blame him for that. And then tapped in. You know, no one was marking him. So again, it was another poor goal to concede. And then I think, you know, we created some chances. There were a couple sort of hacked off the line. We looked quite good going forward. So I was a bit confused why Rowett brought on Matt Smith, because if I'm honest, it looked like we might get an equaliser. If I'm honest, we had looked quite good going forward, few chances, as I say. So, you know, it wasn't like we weren't creating anything or nothing was happening. Well, I think we were. But to bring on then Matt Smith, it kind of just petered out. I know maybe it could have been a game for him to cause some chaos with the conditions, but because we were attacking quite well, I really didn't see the point in bringing Smith on. And then another strange change was George Evans coming on. You know, we're chasing the game and we bring on Evans, which is kind of a bit of a strange move. So I don't think we necessarily deserved to lose. It was a pretty poor performance, but I think probably a draw would have been fair. But it's disappointing because we're just, well, I don't think we've won in three now. And, you know, following the, you know, I guess, real pleasing performance in the end against Bournemouth. And then, you know, to see that is, you know, the inconsistencies kind of creeping back in. And, you know, I thought we would go there and win today. However, credit to Hull, I didn't actually realise, but that's four wins on the spin for them. So, you know, they're clearly on a good run of form. But I think a draw would have probably been fair. I think it's about time George Saville got dropped. He's not doing enough for me in the team. I think there's other midfielders. I mean, maybe quite like to see Kiefton Beld and Billy Mitchell play together. And perhaps when you know, Leonard's fit, perhaps Leonard and Mitchell. But you know, I think Saville seems to be one of the only players apart from Jed Wallace who's basically guaranteed a start. Well, alongside obviously some of the defenders, but I don't think his performance has warranted, you know, a definite start. So I'd like to see him dropped, I think, and bring someone else in. But yeah, it's a disappointing day today. I thought we could go there and win, and to come out, you know, with no points is a tough one to take. But there we go. On to the next one. Come on, you Lions.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Over to Aston Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.